Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
What is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
That's... Yeah. They have asked for that, really.
You can laugh. It was the World Cup.
I'm a little bit of an idealist, but having said that, I want to be like me.
You don't know what you're talking about.
What did you know?
I managed to stay alive for 6 days.
I'd say it to your face, and I'll say it to you now.
I'm down to Anfield, and we'll see them.
What you doing down here, you shawnee man?
Alf Inga Haaland watched on yesterday as a proud father while his son banged in a couple of goals on his Manchester City debut. And you got to be thinking, Alf Inga's record is the highest scoring Haaland in the Premier League. It's under threat already, let's be fair. 18 goals Alfie got across 181 appearances for Nottingham Forest, Leeds and Manchester City in a perfectly serviceable Premier League career. I'm looking at the fixtures though, and I feel Erling could have that number overhauled by the time the September international break comes around. You're welcome to the first Second Captain's Football podcast of the new season. Hi, Ken.
Oh, and how are you?
I'm high on energy, Ken. I'm high on football. Love of the game. I'm
Hey, Ud, how's it going?
The beautiful game, I think Haaland himself called it. I'm just out there playing the beautiful game, he said in one of his post-match interviews, in which he did his usual.
In amongst all the cuss words.
Oh, there were a few cuss words there as well, yeah.
Shreevesy had to tell him to mind his language.
Calm it down there. It's understandable you're excited, though. So, yeah, 2 goals on the board already. He needs another 17 to beat the old fella. 7 more matches between now and the first international break. So that would mean he needs, what, 2.5 goals per game over the following fixtures?
17 matches before the international break?
Seven.
Oh,
seven
sorry.
More matches. He needs another 17. He needs
like
17
lot.
Goals in those 17 matches to overhaul his dad before setting off to play for Norway. The games are Bournemouth, Newcastle, Palace, Forest, Villa, Spurs and Wolves. Now,
he could fill
there's
his boots
at least
four
in.
Of those. Yeah,
yeah. No, there's one hat-trick in there and there's one 4-goal haul in there. So that just leaves 10 goals in
I'm
the other 5 games.
I'm looking at you, Bournemouth.
Good start. Bournemouth got a good start, of course. 2 goals. So basically you'll need 2 goals a game once you account for the hat-trick and the 4-goal salvo. That's already his average is already 2 goals a game. So he's going to get this done. Listen, now that the Premier League is up and running, surely the Monday Football Pod isn't enough for all you non-members listening. So get yourself a World Service membership for only £5 a month plus VAT on secondcaptains.com. And we can all enjoy our football coverage throughout the week together. Why not join us? Report on sport, please, Ken. To be more specific, report on the opening weekend of the new Premier League season.
Well, they say, Owen, that the new fans of the game follow personalities, not teams. But I have to admit that some of us legacy fans have been doing that for a long time, watching Irish players in Premier League matches. So I was interested to see, Owen, that your selection on Premier Sports was to follow Nathan Collins against Wolves rather than Gavin Bazunu against Tottenham.
You see, it's never a straight swap. It's never a straight decision. I don't make these decisions, by the way, first off.
Oh, okay.
McDevitt is playing chess, Ken.
Pontius piloting it already.
You're looking at are there going to be a lot of Spurs games down the line? There might be. Now, I don't actually have the fixture list in front of me, but this is sometimes the thinking as well, you know, that you...
We'll get Leeds-Wolves out of the way. And we'll have Tottenham maybe when they're going for the Champions League.
Leeds Wolves was a pretty good game. Nathan Collins played pretty well, considering
he's already benched Connor Cody.
Yes,
must be a bit awkward.
Yeah,
I mean, it's not his fault. I mean, they could always bench the other guy, Gilman.
They've changed the system to two centre halves instead of three and dropped the club captain to bring Nathan Collins
this
into the team.
This lad's so good. He's basically two defenders. That's what Wolves have said. It's like N'Golo Kanté in midfield, you know? He's like two centre halves. That's how good Nathan Collins is.
Well, he didn't get to do much of the type of thing he was doing in Woods in this game against Wolves. Lord Bamford kind of got the better of him for the second goal, I think, you know. Didn't really get close enough to Lord Bamford, who sort of peeled away around the outside, and then he wasn't able to stop the cross, and then Leeds scored the winning goal of a game that I felt Wolves really should have won. And then there was all that. Did anyone know what actually Jesse Marsh said to Bruno Lage?
It didn't emerge straight afterwards, but later on, I watched on Match of the Day, and apparently, so Bruno Lage was asked about it, and Bruno Lage says, for people who missed this, they basically had a very, very heated exchange as they were walking off the pitch.
It was a
Jesse
lot.
Marsh kind of following Bruno Lage and shouting in his face, and Bruno Lage turning around to shout back. But Bruno Lage said, well, it wasn't just at the end of the match. There was something said earlier on that was unacceptable. But obviously,
right.
He didn't go into what that was.
He said something like, there are things in these days that you cannot say. And I was like, I wonder what that was.
Then they asked Jesse Marsh about it, and he said, there was nothing to it.
Yeah, stonewalling. Stonewall Marsh. Okay, well, fair enough. It wasn't the best start for Collins. Bazunu also. I mean, you know, it was interesting to see Spurs scoring goal after goal. But on social media, I could just see people going, wow, this Bazunu guy is amazing. But I also saw them say stuff like, oh, his distribution isn't great. It looks like his footwork isn't great. And I was like, oh, no, his footwork actually is pretty good. Yeah. I didn't see this full game. So he may have made some kind of mistake or, you know, passed the ball out or passed it to a Tottenham player or something like that. I don't know. But all I can say is there's still plenty of unexpected upside with this guy. For Southampton, and it looks like you're going to need him. looks like Southampton are really going to need Gavin Bazunu, and he's really going to be sharpening up his skills in the Premier League this season. But anyway, okay, if we're talking about following personalities, I guess that means it's now time to turn to Erling Haaland, who, I mean, like, the second goal that Haaland scored, I mean, we were talking to Miguel the other day, and he was talking about the high proportion of goals that had come in this way from balls through and running through the centre. And, you know, we were saying, well, he probably won't get to do that much with City because of the way teams play against them. Here he was doing it. Obviously, they were leading in the game at the time. He had so much time that he was able to run around the ball to make the nicest angle for himself to hit it with his left foot. I mean, that's how far any defender was from being able to stop him doing this. And everyone could see it coming as well. You know, it was like, this is...
Oh, absolutely. I see it come to the extent that as soon as the ball got to De Bruyne, he was still in his own half, and there were two defenders closer to the goal than Haaland was at that moment. And you could just see it. You knew as you're watching it, oh, this is a goal. Haaland's about to score a goal here.
Because
there's no way De Bruyne is not going to play the right pass, and there's almost no way that Haaland's not going to finish it.
Yeah. And, you know, sorry, go on.
No, there was a shot that Sky played quite a bit of him running off in celebration of that second goal, where the camera is kind of like a little bit below head height. And as Erling Haaland jumps up in the air, it literally looks like he's bigger than the London Stadium.
Jumping over a mountain. Yeah.
I was like, holy shit, how big is this guy? Like, oh my God. But it was, sometimes, you know, the old TV coverage does manage to capture like the full status of a goal. And like, as you're seeing Haaland run off and celebrate like that, you're thinking, this is a sight we might as well get used to. We're going to see a lot of this.
Yeah, I mean, just something about Haaland reminds me of... Did you ever read At Swim Two Birds?
Yes.
You know, they're Flann O'Brien, and it's there's a bit in that where, like, what the character in it is, he's sort of writing some kind of nonsense, you know? The third upmark, Finn McCool was a legendary hero of old Ireland. Though not mentally robust, he was a man of superb physique and development. Each of his thighs was as thick as a horse's belly, narrowing to a calf as thick as the belly of a foal. 350s of fosterlings could engage with a handball against the wideness of his backside, which was large enough to halt the march of men through a mountain pass. So, Something about that. Every time I see Haaland, I'm thinking about that. The man is he's an impressive figure. I have to say that the first goal was actually better. Like, I mean, it was a penalty, but the way that he won the penalty, it was basically the same move, but in a much tighter space. Mm. You know what I mean? And that's the kind of scary thing. You know, I mean, it's one thing to sort of run through from halfway and you're too fast and they can't do anything and it's magnificent and everyone is just like, oh my God. But for the first goal, he produced a movement to get away from the defenders in a much smaller space, won the penalty. I mean, it was stupid by the goalkeeper, who at that stage was a sub goalkeeper. I think it was his first involvement in the game, pretty much. He'd just come on.
Well, Haaland had taken out Fabianski in the meantime.
Yeah, well, I don't know if he did, though, actually. I mean, he was involved in the... I was looking at it. Did he go in on him there? You know, because it was a cross.
There was nothing too bad about it. It was funny. I did feel Haaland, up until the goal, was a somewhat clumsy performance. There was that moment. There was a bad-headed, glancing header that he headed wide that he should have scored. Mm. His first involvement was picking up the ball and driving. And you're thinking, oh, wow. But then he drove straight into a player. So, yes, listen, it took him about 25 minutes to find his feet, and then he was absolutely amazing after that, obviously.
Yeah, and one person who was incredibly impressed was obviously Pep Guardiola. Owen, he was speaking after the game to the aforementioned Jeff Shreves.
After the way he took his second goal today, there's already comparisons with Ronaldo, with Thierry Henry, the way he opened up his body. Do you think that he has the potential to end up in that sort of company because he has such talent?
Yeah, of course he has talent. But listen, 1 week ago when he missed the chance that we had, he was a failure, you know? And the people say he's not going to adapt in a Premier League. And everybody laughs at him. So, and now he's going to Thierry Henry or Cristiano Ronaldo. Take time. So it's the first Premier League game. He's 21 or 22 years old. He has a long career. And when he's going to retire, going to hopefully stay many years here in Man City, but we're going to analyze what he has done. So be calm. So the important is the inside of us. We know what we have to do. We know the quality that he has and alongside for the other guys. And after that, we'll see.
Yeah, so that was Pep, and you know, you see this slight annoyance on his face when these comparisons were being made.
It should be stressed there, just the visual is also important for people, because as Jeff Shreves is asking that question, Pep is rubbing his head and puffing his cheeks, and he'd already answered about three, pretty much all Jeff Shreves' questions were about Haaland, which I think is absolutely fair enough from the point of view of the interviewer, but already you can see this is going to start. You were worried, Ken, about whether or not Pep would have to change his style on the pitch to fit Haaland in. It looks like already they're getting over that particular hurdle. I think the bigger issue is going to be how pissed off he's going to be answering questions about how brilliant Erling Haaland is after every match.
Absolutely, like, this is hilarious. And in the press conference that he went into after that interview, he referred back to that. He's like, oh, you know, everyone was saying he's going to be a failure last week. This week, people are telling me he's the new Thierry Henry, Alan Shearer, Cristiano Ronaldo. But that was only the beginning of his Erling Haaland struggle session that the media then put him through. Pep is sitting there. And how is he going to react to just being the hype man for Erling Haaland? Like, he is now Don King to Haaland's Tyson, or like Colonel Tom Parker to Haaland's Elvis. And he's just going to have to sit there and talk about this guy who everyone is like, oh, well, we've never seen anything like him. Pep, have you ever seen anything like this guy?
He didn't tire doing it for Messi.
Sorry?
I mean, he didn't tire of doing it for Messi. So, I mean, so Haaland knows what, you know, the sort of respect that Guardiola gave Messi. So I would say that after a couple of months of Pep getting a little annoyed at having to answer questions, he's going to be like, well, you did it for the last guy, so why can't you do it for me?
I don't know. I mean, with Messi, he could maybe take a bit more credit for the development of Messi's career, in the sense of, like, you know, Messi had been there, Pep had made the big decision to make him the central player, you know, to stake everything on Messi. And so when Messi was doing well, it was kind of also, it was to Pep's credit. Whereas in this case, unless he can push Haaland up into the two-goal-a-game sort of territory. This is just Haaland doing what Haaland does. And so, you know, having talked about him for pretty much the entire presser up to this point, I think this is, we come in here around the sixth minute of the presser. And I mean, this is, so Pep is sort of interesting. Like, you know, he's obviously great. You know, you all said he'd failed. Nobody said that. The question was to do with how well he'd fit into the system. Really, it wasn't a case of, oh, is this guy really all that? But he actually did say something a bit more interesting in this answer. Besides, like, he usually just tries to divert, like, oh, Cancelo is amazing, or Kyle Walker. I'm always telling
Kyle Walker.
You don't realize how good you are, Kyle Walker. You know, when he's asked to talk about him. But here, this is. This is a question about how, where Guardiola starts to talk a little bit about how City themselves might be changing in response to having a player like this.
He said to himself, the finishing in the head, the right, the left, control, understand the game, the movements, it depends on the mates, you know, which movement I have to do, it depends. And of course, today is the first look, the two goals, it wasn't, you know, balls in front of the central defender, Gundogan the first, Kevin the second, and we had the feeling that when we win after passes, we can look at him a little bit more, we'll find him more. In the past, we didn't have a reference like him, and move more right, left, left, right, and now we have to do it again. But in the same time, it's always one high, this guy had to put the ball there, and especially in transitions. So it was an incredible second goal, it was an incredible action from Jack. The goal belongs to him because he keep the ball, attract the opponents, make a perfect pass, Rodri find the pocket, the opposite side. And when that's happening, open space with Kevin, with the one guy running, so it's difficult to stop it. But we'll find many games, five in the back, in the box, a lot. And we have to find alternative, you know, to find him and to do the team playing good.
So yeah, that is... you know, he already is kind of saying, you know, maybe we will, maybe we're going to look for that ball a little bit more. Obviously, in a lot of games, you know, and of course, he ended up crediting the goal to Jack Grealish. Grealish for holding onto the ball and drawing so many, you know, that's what football is all about, in Guardiola's opinion. That's how you, that's what it's all about, drawing in players and then releasing the ball into free men in space. So, yeah, but he also said an impressive, there's one thing that he said which you do sort of wonder about in terms of City this season, because obviously yesterday was like a perfect game for City. You know, West Ham just sort of stood off them, let's, you know, challenging them to pass through is okay, we'll do that, they did that, all very good, everything great. Pep mentioned they've got 17 players in their first team squad. Which seems like, he said, according to Pep, they're the smallest squad in the Premier League. You know, obviously, that's padded out with sort of younger players. But according to Pep, first teamers at 17, which, just given the extremely intense nature of the fixture schedule this season, you do wonder if that is a kind of a thing that might cost them.
So that means everyone except for one player will play every single week. If you've got five subs subs, basically everyone except one guy is going to play every week. Something tells me that number is not
going to
not
increase.
The full truth.
Yeah. No, I think, but well, you know, maybe they will add to the first team numbers. It does seem like a low number, but you know, obviously everyone around the world football was watching this Erling Haaland situation, see what would happen. Obviously, I consult my oracle, I'm Pep understander Diego Torres.
Straight in at the start of the season. Go for it, Ken.
Has been writing about Haaland this week, and he's got a few drive-bys as usual. The substitution, Bernardo Silva, his most frequent accomplice in training, was bad news for the Norwegian. So Bernardo Silva started the match. Haaland can do everything well on a football pitch, but to be unbalanced, he needs partners to be in space, basically. Silva is the first, but his discontent seems manifest since Guardiola started leaving him out in 2020. On the trip to London, the coach's choice is favoured Grealish, who does not have much vision, Gundogan, who is out of shape, and De Bruyne, which, due to lack of physical background, has reduced his radius of action to the second point.
So, he really has it in for De Bruyne.
Also, Grealo doesn't have vision, which is just harsh. When he attacks the spaces, he is like Ronaldo Nazario, said Roy Keane, stationed in the stands of the Olympic Stadium. The old United striker recognised the Norwegian's lightning when evoking the runs of the Brazilian. He describes Haaland as the first top flight star, or the phrase in Spanish is el primer crack de máxima categoría. Can you work out that impenetrable Spanish?
First world-class striker?
El primer crack de máxima categoría.
The first goal of an amazing career.
No, crack is what they call like a Galactico.
Ah,
you know,
okay.
The first crack of the máxima categoría.
Of the highest the caliber?
Highest order?
I believe that's it. That Guardiola has signed in his nearly 20-year coaching career, which is just an interesting point, because Guardiola has obviously signed a lot of top players. I mean, if you sat down, I'm sure you'd see some, Ibrahimovic jumps out, but obviously the implication is Ibrahimovic doesn't belong in that category. Lewandowski is another one that leaps out. But here, what's this about Lewandowski? This is super interesting, because the Haaland thing was so big that it wasn't just this week, or rather the game that was being reported on, but rather the week, the preview. And so, reading again in Diego Torres about how things have gone with Haaland and Alvarez, there's a point about Alvarez here. Alvarez, there are 200 professional attackers in Europe with the same conditions as Alvarez in terms of speed, passing, dribbling, or decision-making ability outside the box, says a coach who has attended City training this summer. Alvarez only stands out in two things: a devastating first touch and an uncheck so surreal that as if he acted with information that no one but him has. He looks like he moves after seeing the play on TV. An uncheck, in other words, the ability to find space, to lose your marker. It is not easy to find this kind of talent, nor is it easy for clubs to invest in their hiring with knowledge of the cost. So this bit stood out to me, right? Guardiola knew as soon as he arrived in Munich, he found himself misunderstood by the board in the face of the struggles of Mario Mandzukic. Neither Hoeneß nor Rummenigge nor Beckenbauer understood the Spanish coach when he explained to them that the striker of the team that had just won the treble was not fit to play the football he wanted. He warned them that after directing Ibrahimovic, Eto'o, Villa and Messi, he understood the most unstoppable teams were built with nines of great mobility and empathy like the last three. Not even Ibrahimovic, the most agile of the traditional strikers, had adapted to the model. So, now listen to this crazy thing, right? They say in Bayern that Guardiola stimulated a deep debate in a club historically accustomed to culminating its lineups with nine tanks. The big center forwards, or such as Janker, Mackay, Elber, Luca Toni, or Mario Gomez. Come Christmas of his first season, however, the coach found himself with a fait accompli. Unbeknownst to him, Bayern had signed Robert Lewandowski, who was free. Guardiola's horror was so great. We've signed Lewandowski. Guardiola's horror was so great that, according to what they say in Munich, that same winter he made the decision not to renew his 3-year contract. He ignored the offer that doubled his salary up to 20 million euros per season. So demoralized he felt at the prospect of building attacks that ended up in the center of the pot for another pigeon to finish off. More acrobatic than Mandzukic, but pigeon nonetheless. I'm like, pigeon? What? The word in Spanish is actually palomero. Palomero, which as far as I can see means pigeon keeper. Like a pigeon fancier. You know? I'm not sure why it was telling me pigeon, but this seems to be the word for a hatcher. You know, I don't know why particularly that word is used. Is it like a pigeon waits for, just stands there like a pigeon waiting for you to throw him crumbs? This is the way that Lewandowski is dismissed. Guardiola organized Bayern to produce scrap metal in industrial quantities so that Lewandowski's opportunism would shine. But in tight games like that 2015 Champions League semifinal that he lost against Atletico after creating 50 chances, the system showed its shortcomings. So basically saying, you know, there's nothing Guardiola finds more demoralizing than just manufacturing a kind of a pinball type of a team that just flips the ball into the area for a pigeon fancier to knock into the net, right? Like Lewandowski, the top scorer in Europe over the last 5 seasons or whatever.
Can you always refer to Lewandowski as the pigeon fancier on this show from now on, please?
Well, I didn't know before now, but maybe I'll have to look at it. So witnesses to City training. Now, this is the ominous stuff for the rest of the season. Witnesses to City training speak of fabulous duels and the positional attacking simulations in tight spaces. Stung by the short Alvarez, the gigantic Haaland multiplies his battery of unchecks every day in an unknown scenario in City practices. It absolutely just, I'm immediately thinking of Ivan Drago in training, right? Like, God knows what they're doing to him in there. But, you know, he's multiplying his battery of unchecks. And Until the summer, the interiors had to devise millimetric passes and strenuous movements to find the strikers. With Alvarez and Haaland, the task of the midfielders is simplified. So, and I think we saw evidence of that. That was written before the match, but the evidence was the first goal, really, in that game. I mean, you know, up against a team that's defending with everyone behind the ball, you know, good sort of West, you know, David Moyes structure or whatever, everything is very stiff and rigid and solid looking. And they were able to find space. This huge guy finds a tiny space. And yeah, well, it's...
All your doubts are erased, Ken.
You know, it did... You did... When you looked at it, in a game where he's scoring and playing well, as opposed to one where he's kind of not really touching the ball and not really getting involved, you sort of think, well, how can this not work? Like, I mean, if you got all these guys just feeding him the ball, you know, I mean, how can Kevin De Bruyne not play well with this guy? You know what I mean? It just doesn't compute. You know what I mean? So, maybe. I mean, everyone, certainly a player as high profile as him, defenders are going to study him, figure out what it is that he's doing. Is there anything we can do to stop this?
That's the question.
So, yeah, we'll see. So what else? Obviously, it was a great weekend for City because Liverpool dropped points immediately.
It's in their hands now, you know?
Well, they've still got to shake off Arsenal. I mean, Arsenal are there, you know, and Jesus, I thought, was brilliant. I mean, he didn't score, but, you know, played some brilliant
God, I've watched so much football since that Arsenal game. to delve back into the recesses of my brain to last Friday night. But
yeah, but already in the Arsenal game, I thought I could see a kind of a weird tendency, which is that they've apparently changed the rules in the league so that, like, all kinds of fouls are now no longer fouls. So
let it flow. Is that what you're saying?
Well, let it flow was like, it's like they've taken let it flow to the next level. Just push people over. It's fine. People like it. You know, just push. And especially what I kept seeing was this situation where the ball comes into the player, he's trying to shield it, and a guy bashes into him from behind. He goes down, and it's a free kick. Except it's not a free kick. It's play on. And, you know, this was kind of apparently the standard approach to these situations in the Premier League. You know, a physical coming together, well, that's the game. And I mean, it hasn't really been the game before. It certainly hasn't been the game of the last 30 years, but it seems as though that's what they're going to try and get back to. Now, Fulham's approach against Liverpool was the opposite of West Ham's against City. So for West Ham, kind of were very passive and said, you know, we're you can have the ball, we'll guard the spaces. Fulham came after Liverpool, and Liverpool didn't like it at all. You know, what they did to Liverpool in the first 20 minutes particularly of the game was like what Liverpool would do to teams in the early sort of Klopp years, when they were kind of, you know, oh, we've got to outrun everybody. And now they seemed kind of like this stately, venerable team, sort of getting flustered at being, you know, being abused by these hustlers. And, you know, the midfield in particular really just looked kind of slow and not really able to get to grips with it. And Thiago obviously got injured, which is just the thing that always happens with Thiago. And then you got Mitrovic, who, you know, I haven't seen such dominant hold-up play since that clip of Baron Trump receiving the ball and laying it up. I mean, Baron Trump is like 2 meters tall, you know?
Yeah.
He was just dominating everybody, but he wasn't up against, to be fair, people like Virgil van Dijk, who, I mean, obviously Mitrovic jumped over Trent Alexander-Arnold to score the goal. Although, again, you know, you saw, it's another one of those moments from Arnold, just like in the Champions League final, where, you know, he there's a cross to the back post. It's, you know, if it's anyone's responsibility to deal with, it's him. He just doesn't go for the ball. You know, like, the ball was there. He could, and it wasn't as though, you know, Mitrovic jumped 8.5 feet in the air and there was nothing Trent Alexander-Arnold could do about it. He could have tried to get the ball, but I think he was just hoping that the ball would sort of whistle past the whole situation. And obviously, Mitrovic had other ideas about what was going to happen to that ball. But he headed it off Alexander-Arnold's head. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
Alexander-Arnold's sort of ducking ducking head, and it ended up in the net. And then obviously he again with Alexander Arnold, you know, once again it's a kind of you have to pin that one on him. And it is obviously the kind of things teams target. And it's just, you know, when I look at the midfield and then I look at the right back, I kind of think to myself, really, should this still be? Look, I'm not going to get back on that hobby horse, just yet.
Then Mitrovic did Van Dijk. Now, you were saying there weren't many frees and penalties given, but that was one that...
Well, this type of penalty...
I think it probably was a penalty, because when you saw it again, you could actually see... Often with those ones, you're looking, he didn't trip, he didn't seem to make contact, but then if you look for... It's always a good idea to just keep looking all the way up the body. When you get to Van Dijk's knee and Mitrovic's knee, that's where you're seeing he actually did seem to knock
it. It definitely was a penalty, there's no doubt. And Klopp said afterwards, well, I was told he got the ball. And that was also true, because he did. He went with one foot... He kind of got a toe on the ball. It ricocheted off Mitrovic, who was basically still... It didn't take the ball away from Mitrovic, although maybe it was going to go to Alexander Arnold, who was also there. Van Dijk didn't need to then go for it again with his other foot, which is what he did. And that's how he ended up bringing down Mitrovic with his knee. So it was a penalty. And it's one of his worst games, I think, for a good while, just in terms of how things went. And his... I think Opta had the stat. This is the first time he's been dribbled past by an opponent and conceded a penalty in the same game. I mean, that doesn't happen very often. But you know, that was that. So poor start. But the one good thing about the game, obviously, was the way that the end of it went, when they had Darwin Nunez on, and Nunez again looked, you know, very lively. And it's hard really to see him spending too much more time on the bench, especially when you consider that lack of dynamism in the midfield. That they're going to need to get it from somewhere. Remember the thing when you're losing Sadio Mane is you kind of just forget how strong he was. You know, and aside from like the goals and the sort of speed and the threat behind and all this type of stuff, just physically he was one of the top players always on the pitch in every game. Luis Diaz seems a very skillful player, but he's lightweight compared to Mane, so. You know, if you're losing that, you need to bring it in from somewhere else. And maybe the argument, I mean, obviously they intend to use Nunez, he's their record signing. He will be their record signing if he's any good, which looks like he's going to be. So what else? We will be talking, obviously, to Jonathan Wilson, who was at Old Trafford for the Man United game. Has anyone, Owen, remarked on a supposed resemblance between you and the new Manchester United manager?
Has anybody remarked on this resemblance again? Yes.
You are, of course, 10 years his junior, Owen.
I've literally changed my Twitter bio to reflect this, Ken.
Oh, really?
Yeah. No.
I am not. Have you? I am not the Manchester United manager.
Wow. Look me up there, Murph.
I will. Give me a second here now. Jesus.
Yeah. Who was it? John Tinsley, really long-time listener. Has anyone ever seen these two men in the same room at the same time? And it's a picture of myself. Looks like backstage at one of our Liberty Hall shows. And Eric Ten Hag, who is looking his usual inscrutable self. I actually showed that tweet to my wife, who reacted by putting her... You know that when somebody is shocked by the truth of something and puts her hands over her mouth and goes,
oh my God.
Yeah, she's like, that is
spooky,
you.
Like this is an actual... Well, is that you?
There's been a full overhaul over McDevitt's Twitter, Ken.
I'm 10 years younger, by the way. I'll absolutely take the Ten Hag lookalike. I have no problem with it. But ideally, when you're being compared with somebody physically, you'd like them to be 10 years younger, not 10 years older.
Well, look, he's a fit man, Owen. He strode onto the pitch. He said hello to Fred the Red, and everything went downhill from there. Danny Welbeck rivaling Mitro for the Baron Trump Hold a Play Award. Just absolutely everything fed up to Welbeck was sort of sticking, and he was just in this really calm way, laying off little passes. Brighton, just little simple passes to a nearby player. It's actually easy when you remember that it's not that hard. You know what I mean? And he, but it comes from the sort of structure that they have. You know, I mean, when they move up the field, they move up together. I mean, look at the two goals. Both on both occasions, the ball goes from one side of the penalty area to the other. You know what I mean? They've got players pushed into the box on both sides. You know, there's you know, there, it was really impressive by Brighton. I mean, you could tell, like, United are really going to struggle here after 20 minutes of the game, you know, because they then, you know, the preseason had gone quite well, but of course they lost Martial then to injury. He was kind of playing up front for them in preseason. So they had to kind of rejig the attack. What they came up with was really unconvincing. I mean, Ten Hag said beforehand, you know, Eriksen can play false nine. He's really good in that position. You know, it just looked confused. I mean, you had Sancho and Rashford switching wings. You had Bruno Fernandes and Eriksen kind of switching between being the further forward and, you know, more withdrawn player. But at no point did this look like it made any kind of sense. And the terrible thing from Ten Hag's point of view is it actually looked better with Ronaldo. once Ronaldo came on, because he saw the face of Ronaldo as he sat there, you know, on the bench. Because Ronaldo is just not, he will not accept sitting on the bench. Like, it's not, as far as he's concerned, this is a brutal insult. Like, you know, you cannot do this to me. His face was sort of showing that. So it's difficult, I think, for Ten Hag to leave him out now, despite what he said about Ronaldo's level of fitness not being up to it. It's like, okay, yeah, you're going on about fitness, but who are you actually going to use? You know, there's not too many other options. It's being reported now that they're, you know, looking at signing Arnautovic, and I just feel
33 years of age.
Like, I honestly feel as though if they do that, that's going to make people really angry, because it just seems like, what? Like, Arnautovic, this is a guy who was playing for Stoke like 10 years ago, and now he's the Man United centre forward. And meanwhile, we all have to watch Haaland for Man City, you know, who's like some kind of a Superman. Like, everyone in the world is just like, my God, have you seen this? You know, people are just like crouched over screens, you know, in all the corners of the world going, have you seen this guy? You know, and we've got Arnautovic. Like, how is this? Like, the clubs have switched places. Like, Man City and Man United have switched places from 20 years ago. Like, it's one that we know that Man City have been the more powerful club for like 10 years now, right? That's sort of more or less the way that it's gone. And that's kind of not surprising. What's surprising is how United seem to be getting worse, you know, losing at home to Brighton. That's the kind of thing that City used to do, you know, 20 years ago when they were a joke, you know. And that's and signing Arnautovic because you've lost at home to Brighton. That's another Man City 2003. I mean, Arnautovic maybe was around. But you see what I mean? Like, this is really...
It's not a move to excite people, especially when they still haven't got the Frankie de Jong transfer over the line. Well, now they're talking about signing a 33-year-old who's, I don't know if anyone ever considered him world-class. He's a handful, Arnautovic, at his best.
Arnautovic, I don't think that he has been a bad player.
Yeah.
But I just think that at 33, and especially his shape, his size, his girth, you know, I'm just like, he's a huge guy. And if you're looking for a reference, you know, as Guardiola said, of Haaland, then he's certainly that. You know, you can pick him out, you can look up and you will be able to see where he is on the pitch. He's a big man. But at 33, you know, having kind of played for sort of mid-ranking Premier League clubs before, I just think if you're Man United, you're thinking, how has this happened to us? You know, this shouldn't be us. Like, why is this happening? Look at what all the other teams have done. Like, the other teams have all signed strikers. Richarlison has gone to Tottenham for like 60 million. You can argue about the price of it, but like Richarlison is like Arnautovic maybe was 10 years ago. You know, he's got potential. He's a young guy. Sterling has gone to Chelsea. They may sign more players. Nunez has joined Liverpool. You know, United were supposedly interested in him, but didn't get him. Jesus, Arsenal have signed Gabriel Jesus, and United are looking at Arnautovic.
Yeah.
You know, I think they better not sign
him. You've
turned
into Alan Iverson. It's just, you just keep saying the word Arnautovic.
We're talking about Arnautovic. No, I honestly think like things will kick off if they sign him. You know, it's sort of unfair, and it's not really a reflection on him. The other thing, all obviously with Arnautovic, is he does have a history of some bad incidents. You know, he was accused of, he's been accused of sort of abusing opponents. I mean, there was a thing in the Euros, you know, remember when he scored in the Euros last season and he was shouting something, and I forget which of his teammates was like sort of putting their mouth over his, not putting their mouth over his hand, putting their hand over his mouth, which to try and block the cameras from seeing what was saying, which, although the intention to defend the teammate was noble, it did rather draw attention. You know, there's a couple of instances like that.
It was clear that he was given a one game suspension. I presume this is for the same incident you're talking about, but was cleared of discriminatory behavior in his mid-match rant against North Macedonia.
There's a few of these, sorry, North Macedonia and Albania. So there was a few of these type of things, but, you know, I mean, the question has to be like, is this really the best idea we have? You know, someone needs to come up with a better idea. Šeško, they've been talking about from Salzburg, who at least has the benefit of being young. And again, there's potential, but Salzburg realizing the situation, like, this guy's going to be really, really expensive. We're not sure you have the money for this guy. So then there's another issue for United to solve. They've Brentford next. They have Liverpool after that. And Brentford are another team a little bit like Brighton. They're not as good as Brighton, but in terms of organization, you know, and automatic, what was the word Ten Hag used? Ten Hag had a particular word for this, but, you know, kind of set moves, like
well drilled is the old fashioned phrase for it.
And they're gonna rein in high balls on Lisandro Martinez. I mean, Martinez obviously was involved in this ridiculous incident with Welbeck where he knocked him over, and it's such a blatant penalty. And you reminded me of the Leeds Wolves game where In the Leeds Wolves game, it was
Jose Sa, the goalkeeper incident.
Yeah.
So there's a high ball, one of those, the ones where the keeper is rushing out to try to punch it away. The attacker, well, the right back in this case for Leeds, is steaming in, and he's not steaming in, he's just running. He's about to head the ball. The goalkeeper is steaming out, goes for man and ball. You could say he doesn't get ball, gets only man, gets man's head, and looks like he could have seriously injured him for a couple of moments. Thankfully, Christensen for Leeds was okay, but it was as clear a penalty as you could possibly see. And to me, it's a pretty clear red card as well. But maybe your let it flow directive, Ken, combined with the old, you know, the goalkeepers union, meant that for some reason it wasn't even given as a penalty, and there was no obvious VAR check. It wasn't like one of those long ones where it's, I could presume they looked at it in some way, but yeah, no, nothing made of it.
Absolutely crazy. Like, it's just nonsense what they're doing. You know, this refereeing is, oh, let it flow. But all it does is just encourage fouls. You know, that's not, encouraging fouls is not good. I mean, when I say encourage fouls, obviously you can get away with things which previously were given as fouls. But now you can just, it's easy. Oh, they've played the ball in between the lines to their, you know, creative attacker who's got his back to goal. No problem. Just smash into the ground and come away with the ball. The crowd will cheer, and, you know, they won't do that again. Maybe the next time they'll be launching diags from 40 yards, towards their converted centre half, centre forward, and we'll be back in 1988 and we'll realise why we changed the rules in the first place. You know,
that's your fear, that ultimately this is counterproductive. It ends up encouraging foul play. So rather than speeding up the game by letting things go, it'll end up slowing down the game by letting the more rugged elements of the sport take over from the players.
It punishes players who are trying to play in tight spaces. You know, if you say, well, tight spaces, you know, if the ball is there, I think, then, okay, well, certainly Man City will have to rethink their approach if the refereeing remains consistent, which it won't, because there are ridiculous things like, we all have to watch Brighton not being given one of the clearest penalties you can imagine. And VAR saying, yeah, we think that's all right. We think that's all right. You know what I mean? And so won't last, but, like, it's just, it annoys me. Anyway, a couple of other small things here before we get on to talk to the guys.
The guys being, did I mention already? Jonathan Wilson and Jack Pitbull coming right up.
Messi is good again. I mean, he's always been good, really, but he seems to be playing, like, he did some amazing stuff in the PSG. I mean, PSG, you know, won 75-0 or whatever it was. Game didn't necessarily seem that competitive, but Messi scored one great goal where he sort of ran through the middle, gave the ball to Neymar, got it back and slotted it into the corner. Another one where he ghosted through the offside line and chested it and scored with a bicycle kick. The best thing that he did, however, was setting up a goal for Neymar with a pass which I've never seen someone do before. Like, there was a cutback Messi's kind of, so the cutback is kind of the line will go to Messi and then to Neymar, the line of the ball. Neymar's, they're both sort of coming onto this ball. And, you know, what have we seen players do? Things like maybe dummy it. What Messi does is better. He doesn't dummy it. He just lifts it. Have you actually seen this?
No, no.
Like, but, so he doesn't actually affect the direction of the ball. The ball is still going across. But what he does is he just puts his foot and just lifts it very slightly so that the defender who's trying to cut out the pass, it just goes over his foot, runs into the path of Neymar, who just knocks it into the net. An unbelievable pass. So he seems to be back in his
good to hear
in his groove, which maybe is why Barcelona are saying they're going to sign him again. So maybe they can figure out a way to lever that one up.
I'm having a buzz floating around. Anyone want to knock? Give me a shout.
6 million ways to die. Choose one.
I don't like the name in because, you know, I actually think he's a very good writer. But it was that. This was a dig at football people who know the game. Using statistics to try and undermine people who have eyes, ears, and common sense.
What I'm saying is that sometimes the eyes and ears mislead you. The ears, particularly if it's Paul Merson talking to them, might mislead you.
This was a dig at football people who know the game.
You know the balls, man. You know the studs.
Have a proper debate. I'd love to debate him. You could sell tickets for that.
All I have to back it up are facts. All I have to back it up is a factual record of what took place.
Bring it on. This was a dig at football people who know the game. He's the one who's on the attack, don't forget. Mm. And has been for some time without naming people. He mentioned pundits. Mm. Well, who are the football pundits?
I think they call that on a verbal broadside.
You've been on the attack, Ken, but you just don't have what it takes to name names.
You don't have the balls, Ken. You know, the stones.
Don't have the balls.
Yeah, I don't want to put them down. They seem to want to prove that you don't need to know anything about football to write about it. This was a dig at football people who know the game.
You know the balls, Kenny. You know the stones.
Making their first appearances of the season on the Second Captain's Podcast, it is Jonathan Wilson. How are you, Jonathan?
I'm very well, thanks. How are you?
Very good, thank you. Very well, I should say. And the Athletic's Jack Pitbrook. Good to chat to you again, Jack.
Great to be back on.
I think, Jonathan, you were at Old Trafford, so I think we'll start there because there's a prediction that our listeners have been waiting all pre-season to hear. It's nothing to do with Erik ten Hag or Cristiano Ronaldo or anything like that. Last season, we all remember you predicted big things for Brighton on this very show. You said they could finish, I think you went all out, you said as high as 12th.
Yes.
And they exceeded even your lofty expectations with a top 10 finish. So this should now be an annual slot, Jonathan Wilson's Brighton prediction for the season. After what you saw yesterday, what's the ceiling? Where are they going to finish this year?
I thought they struggled without Bissouma and Cucurella. But Moises Caicedo was brilliant. I mean, a player, I have to say, I didn't know a huge amount about. I was vaguely aware that he played for Ecuador. But I thought he was, certainly the first half, I thought he was absolutely sensational, only 20. So they seem to have recruited exceptionally well there. I think the use of Trossard as left wing back made a lot of sense. I mean, the truth is, you know, they won 2-1, but if they'd had a proper centre forward and if they'd been given the penalty, they clearly should have been.
Hang on a second. Danny Welbeck gave one of the greatest centre forward performances I've ever seen, and explain me. Did you not think Welbeck was sensational?
Yeah, but he's not a finisher.
Yeah, he made a goal scorer alongside.
Yeah, sorry, you're right. I said centre forward. I meant goal scorer. They still struggle to score goals. Welbeck was in a sort of target man role. Was brilliant. I agree.
Yeah. Well, we still haven't got the prediction. I mean, this is what the crowd is waiting for, Jonathan. What
How high can the seagulls soar?
Well, I think it depends a lot on how quickly Aston Villa sack Steven Gerrard.
Oh my God! It's just all grenades.
He's not good enough. Like, look at the money they've spent. Look how good that squad is, and look at how badly they played on Saturday, and look how badly they played at the end of last season.
But what's that got to do with Brighton?
Well, as to whether Villa have a squad that should see them finish above Brighton. And if Gerrard stays beyond Christmas, they probably won't. And I think if I were the Villa leadership, Graham Potter is the sort of person I'd be looking to bring in.
Ah, I see what you're saying. Okay, so that's how
I think
Potter's
a lot depends on Leicester and how it plays out in the next 3 or 4 weeks. But I think I think they could be 10th. I think it could be as good as that this season.
You've gone right into the top 10 this year. You're brave calls straight out
well,
the gate.
Well, listen, yes, yeah, I mean, you're suggesting, Jonathan, that Graham Potter could be tempted away by mid-ranking Premier League clubs like Villa and Leicester. Do you think that he might be better advised hanging on for an even bigger vacancy? What I mean is, do you think...
I think we know what you mean already, Ken.
There might be a big job coming up at Old Trafford sooner rather than later. I mean, what's your feeling about that at this point?
I really hope for his sake he never, or also not in the near future, is tempted to take the Manchester United job. I mean, you know, it's such an obvious poison chalice. You know, the skull and crossbones is there on the chalice. You know, it's obvious, like... Like, don't destroy yourself doing that. I mean, I think with people like Potter who've been very successful at one club, it's always difficult to know how long they should stay, because there is clearly a ceiling of what something like Brighton can achieve. But he's clearly perfect for that club. I think the recruitment's, you know, as I said, it's been excellent. I think the environment of that club is brilliant. But Aston Villa have a higher ceiling. Manchester United have a much, much higher ceiling. But to go to United now, with everything that's wrong at that club, I just, why would you do it? Like, wait till it's wasteland completely been levelled and you can build it again from scratch. You know, go in and with your plans and dig down the foundations and rebuild it to your image. Don't go in now where you'd have to be pulling things down as well as putting things up.
Jackie, and you were watching the United game from far, but what do you make of what Jonathan Wilson is saying here in terms of it's such an obvious poison chalice? I mean, do you still think they're in that phase? I mean, were you surprised by how badly things went at the beginning for Erik ten Hag?
I wasn't that surprised by how badly things went, because this is a performance that we've seen a lot from, what, five or six different managers in the last eight or so years. And even if you're bullish about ten Hag's ability to imprint his style of play on the team, it's obviously going to take quite a while. Even if this is the kind of year zero reset moment, that doesn't mean that you're good from the first game. Like, if you look at, I don't know, Pochettino at Tottenham or Klopp at Liverpool or whatever, it's obviously a lot of work before you can get good. And they don't have the players. Like, they obviously don't have the players that he needs to play the style of football he wants. So I think there are definitely reasons for not overjudging Ten Hag on how bad it was yesterday. I guess the question is how much stomach do the fans and board of Manchester United have for it to get worse and worse and worse, if it continues to get worse, before they decide that they want to reset with somebody else?
I mean, I think all of that is true, and I'm absolutely not blaming Ten Hag for this. But you go to Old Trafford and, you know, the press box is, you know, as you look from a picture to the left of the director's box, you look over to the director's box, there's Avram Glazer, who's turned up for the first time in however many months. Just this fixed stare ahead, this sort of vacant grin on his face. There's no comprehension there of what's going on the pitch in front of him. Along to his left, you've got Alex Ferguson shaking his head, looking gloomy. Down on the bench, you've got Cristiano Ronaldo throwing his hands in the air every time they concede. You know, it's so hard for managers to go in there and not be constrained by all these things going on around him. And Ten Hag's a pretty tough, bullish bloke. I mean, certainly his performances and press conferences suggest he's pretty hard. He's gone around and culled all the private chefs. You know, he's not afraid to get blood on his hands. But you sort of think the forces arrayed against him are so great. And you look at the lack of confidence of, I mean, Rashford, most obviously. You know, there's that terrible moment in the second half when it turned out Ronaldo was onside, but the flag went
up.
Yeah,
it would have been a goal.
It was one of those where you sort of first instinct is, oh, that's probably offside. But play goes on, and you sort of think, oh, God, this late flag, all it's done is created this space in which Marcus Rashford can pointlessly humiliate himself again. And when that ball was played across, there was no sense he was going to score. And I don't know how he rebuilds that confidence, but it needs to happen. You look at that Bruno Fernandes chance after, what, 7 or 8 minutes, and you sort of think, well, if that had gone in, maybe it would have been different. But the point is, not only did it not go in, but it's actually an inexplicable miss. The ball's pulled back to him. He's got no defender within 5 or 6 yards. It's as clear a shot as you're going to get in a Premier League game.
It bobbles slightly, John.
I mean, he's Bruno Fernandes. He should be better than that. Like he missed the target by a huge distance. And then he just sort of disappeared into himself. I think David De Gea has become a massive problem for them. I think he was at fault with the second goal. But generally, I think his shot stopping is fine. He can't pass. He can't play the ball out from back. That's why Spain have got rid of him. And so Brighton's press just kept on causing them problems. And there was twice in the first 20 minutes when United presented the ball to Brighton forwards in the box. And you know, that's what I was thinking of when I said that if Brighton had a goal scorer, it would have been worse for United, because those were two glorious chances. And you sort of think, well, against a team with a striker, those are goals, just from the defence not being able to pass it out. Yeah, Dalot's not good enough. Maguire's confidence is shot. The midfield two, Fred and McTominay, just all over the place, offering no protection. The pressing was dreadful. Christian Eriksen deployed centre forward, didn't work at all. Yeah. Sorry, go on.
No, there's a couple of issues here. First, just briefly on McTominay, you don't see a young Jordan Henderson in him. I mean, you know, it struck me that his performance yesterday was abysmal. But successive Manchester United managers keep picking him, putting him in the team. They obviously like something about him, you know, like his attitude is good, his fitness is great. He looks like he could be a very useful player, and he plays like that, and you think, this guy's never going to be good enough. But I've thought that about Jordan Henderson many times, and I was wrong.
Maybe I'm not the right person to ask, because I saw Jordan Henderson very early in his career, and I saw the progression almost game by game in that first season. I saw his capacity to learn and develop and get better.
Well, that makes you the right person to ask, then.
I haven't seen that with McTominay. Yeah. And I haven't followed him from early enough in his career to sort of... But I don't get any feeling he's a better player now than he was 5 years ago. And that might be the environment. Yeah, so that's a very hard environment to become a better player in. I think managers like him because he's an honest trier. And because fans basically quite like him because they see a bloke who is trying quite hard, even if he's not quite good enough for them. Fred was dreadful yesterday as well. The pair of them were awful, but in a generally awful team performance. Yeah. Gareth Southgate was there in the director's box as well. And he must have been looking at that thing. And actually, the only English player here who's playing remotely well, sorry, the only two English players here playing remotely well are Webster and Welbeck.
Yeah.
Nobody on the Manchester United team. Like Sancho was never involved in the game.
Yeah, Erik ten Hag has at least managed to get one major signing through the door. Lisandro Martinez is the fourth most expensive player signed during the transfer window, and obviously there was a lot of talk about his height. And Brighton's very first action of the game was to boot a long ball in his direction, as though to remind him of this. But what did you make of his performance overall?
I mean, it was chaotic. He was sort of all over the place, but I'm not really sure that's his fault. I think the structure just wasn't there. I mean, I think that was a foul on Welbeck. I think that should have been a penalty. Mm. I thought he gave the ball away a lot. He just seemed to be buzzing everywhere, which I think for a centre-back is not a good sign. But whether that's his fault or whether it's the structure, I'm not sure. You come back to the fact that Welbeck bossed that game in the air. And with the great respect to Danny Welbeck, he's not the world's greatest target man. So if Martinez is struggling against Welbeck in the air, he's going to have real struggles against bigger and stronger centre-forwards.
Did you get the impression at any point, I mean, this is something that I began to think pretty early in the game, is why is this guy playing centre-back when they've got Raphael Varane on the bench and McTominay and Fred in midfield, and Martinez can also play in
the
midfield.
Back of midfield, yeah.
I completely agree.
Given the players they've got, that seemed to be an obvious... Unless he's going to play with the back three, that seems an obvious solution. Because Varane, I would say, is still the best central defender. He may not have had a great season last season, but we know how good he is. To play him and Maguire, and he could play to the right, Maguire could go back to the left, which he favours despite being right-footed. And then Martinez, that sort of busyness, that sort of energy would seem better deployed at the back and field plugging gaps than sort of being all over the place at centre-back. I completely agree with you.
Jack, I wonder what your opinion is. I mean, we know what Jonathan's opinion is, but what is your opinion about the situation with Ronaldo, obviously, sitting there on the bench? I mean, he just adopted this magnificent sneer as he sat there. You know, everyone knows what he thinks about being left on the bench. Erik ten Hag had pointed out that this guy isn't actually fit, but I suppose Ronaldo would retort, I've been fit for 20 years, so I don't really see what's different about it. Now, it's sort of difficult for him, I think, to actually leave him out of the upcoming games. I mean, they play Brentford next, and they play Liverpool, so they're already under pressure. But how do you think this situation, like, can you see a future in which Ronaldo stays at Man United and that isn't a disaster?
No. I think he probably will stay, because it seems to be quite clear that Ronaldo and Mendes have overplayed their, or they've kind of overestimated the strengths of their hand this summer, because they clearly thought that they could click their fingers and he'd get lots of, you know, exciting, shiny offers from big teams, but that seemingly hasn't happened at all. Maybe, you know, there's obviously a bit of time left in the market. Maybe Georges will pull something out of the bag, but you'd probably bet against it at this point. I think he'll have to stay. I think that's really bad for United. It's clear that he doesn't fit with what Ten Hag's trying to do. I mean, even worse than that, I think, is probably the distraction factor. The fact that we're, you know, people talk about him all the time, the camera's on him all the time, people ask about, you know, did he leave early after the friendly against Rayo Vallecano, that kind of thing. I think he's inimical to the team ethic as well as the style of football that Ten Hag is trying to play. I think for as long as Ronaldo is there, they are going to get worse. And I'm sure, you know, Ronaldo fans would say, well, he'll still score a few goals for us. But I think I think, you know, the price isn't worth the prize in that sense. Like, it's not worth the goals that he will score for them this season are not worth the downside of him, of his still being there.
You were at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, Jack, to see the league leaders in action. So is it a case of do believe the preseason hype?
Yeah, well, I mean, look, all Spurs fans would have gone into that game very optimistic, I think, because of how they finished the season and the signings they made over the summer and so on. And actually, I think it's one of those rare cases where they would have left the ground even more optimistic than they were beforehand. Like, they were really good. Yeah. And they were good in the same way they were good last season. And they were good without any of the new players playing. Mm. I thought, you know, Kulusevski was sensational. Sessegnon was really good. Even Kane and Son weren't especially good, and the team was still great. And that has, you know, Tottenham haven't been able to do that for years. It's a very long time since Tottenham could batter somebody with Kane having an off day and Son not looking great either. So, yeah, in that sense, very optimistic.
They have, obviously, I mean, you mentioned that it was all their regular players from last season that started the game, but they did obviously have a lot of strength on the bench, and Daniel Levy has somehow been persuaded to set aside his long-term habit of doing all his business in the last 6 hours of the transfer window on August 31st. How did that happen?
Well, I think there's two reasons. One reason is that Tottenham are just in a financially stronger position now than they have been for a while. Clearly...
See, I'm a bit surprised to hear that as well, because, you know, the talk during the pandemic was certainly, oh dear, you know, we've just built the most expensive stadium in the country, and now we can't put anyone in it, and this is really bad. But apparently their situation is actually good.
Well, I think now that, you know, COVID is effectively over, or at least it's over in a policy sense, that means that, you know, they can rely on a big season of stadium revenue back in the Champions League, that sort of thing. So they can plan to have that money coming in the future. So that's one reason. I think the other big reason is political pressure on Daniel Levy. I mean, Levy, he loves having Conte there, but Conte being there puts Levy under a lot of pressure because he's scared that Conte would walk, basically. You know, Conte's only got 1 year left in his contract. He's walked out in Juventus in the past, walked out into Milan. It's not an empty threat with Conte. And I think Levy is anxious that it might happen. He's got Paratici there as well, who can exert a bit more pressure, saying, you know, oh, Juventus, we wouldn't wait till the last day of the window. We'd certainly get our best players, our best targets in at the start of the summer. And all of a sudden, Levy is, somebody suggested to me the other day he was isolated. I'm not that's quite a strong word, but I do
lonely
think
at the
he's,
top.
Yeah, I do think he feels more pressure from Conte and Paratici than, say, he ever felt from Pochettino. Because with Pochettino, like, A, Pochettino would never criticise Levy in public, and B, Pochettino was always on long-term deals. So there was never the prospect that Pochettino would just walk off. So this puts a lot of pressure on Levy to deliver, and that's why I think he has been forced out of his comfort zone and forced to rip up his transfer window playbook this summer in quite the way that he has.
Four goals scored, that meant four goals conceded, by our number one Republic of Ireland goalkeeper, Gavin Bisounou. Jack, there's constantly this debate over here about between Caoimhín Kelleher and Gavin Bisounou. Bisounou is very much a number one at the moment, and we certainly like to think he could be one of the Premier League's top goalkeepers. Would you have pinned any of the goals on him? Yes, there was one that the one they got from a corner, he kind of spilled the initial shot, maybe could have caught that one, but was it Bisounou's fault?
No, it wasn't Bisounou's fault. He made some really good saves. There was a really good one from Son in the first half. I think there was a good one from Kane towards the end of the first half as well. I came away from that game thinking he was pretty good. Okay. I certainly don't think he was the reason that Saints lost. I mean, I think it's going to be a tough old season for Saints, given the everything that's happened there over the last few years, and they've obviously Hasenhüttl's been asked to bring in a whole new backroom staff, which isn't a great sign of confidence in him as manager. But I thought Bisounou was basically fine.
Okay, we've spent 15 minutes or so without mentioning Erling Haaland yet, so I guess it's time to do that. I mean, I don't know, Jack, if you've been listening to this or actually any other podcast in recent times, but I don't know. There's a lot of maybe what the internet people call copium going on. We were huffing on the copium of Erling Haaland, perhaps wondering how to make himself relevant to this Man City team. And after watching City at West Ham, it sort of flipped completely to they're just going to rain assists on Haaland, aren't they? It's just going to be like rose petals at a wedding or something, just pouring assists down on his head, and he's going to score. He's going to break Dixie Dean's record this season.
Well, look, I don't know if he will, but I do. Yesterday was amazing, I thought, just even just watching on TV. Like, he's so quick.
Oh, it's unbelievable. How does he get moving so quick, and he's that size?
I know. Like, I remember the first, I think, probably only time I've seen Haaland play in the flesh was a Champions League game between Dortmund and PSG just before COVID. So, like, it was the game where he did that famous shot that hit the metal grate behind the Westfalenstadion, which was so loud. And there was a moment in that game where Dortmund were doing a fast counter-attack. I kind of looked at the pitch, quickly glanced down to a team sheet to see what number somebody was, looked back up, and Haaland was like 10 metres further forward than I would have expected him to be at that point, given that I didn't anticipate him being that quick. And that's always so weird when you're seeing a player for the first time and you're realising how fast they are. And the only other player I can think of like that in recent years who's had that effect on me is Mbappe. But at least Mbappe... Yeah, but with Haaland, it's kind of freakier, isn't he? Because he's so tall. He's definitely quite... He has that, like, uniqueness to him, doesn't he? In the sense of his physicality and speed. It's certainly interesting to see how it goes from here.
We were saying earlier, Jonathan, you just... Say for that second goal, you knew as soon as the ball reached Kevin De Bruyne that they're about to score a goal, which seems like a ridiculous thing to say when there's still a couple of defenders in the way. But you just knew with De Bruyne with that much space and Haaland with that much time to figure out his run was definitely going to get in position to score a goal and was almost certainly going to score, which is a frightening thought that, situations like that are almost guaranteed goals now for Manchester City. What did you make of Haaland's performance?
Yeah, I mean, I thought the odd thing after the Community Shield was that I didn't think... I mean, look, Haaland didn't look fully fit in that game. But I thought the bigger problem was he wasn't getting the service that his runs demanded. He kept on starting to make a burst and the ball wasn't being played, even when midfielders were in space. So my point was, it's partly about him adapting to City, but it's also about City adapting to him. And part of the reason he's been brought in is clearly to make them slightly more direct. And Sunday's... Yeah, I mean, it's not a huge thing to work out. If you've got the ball in space and Haaland's making a run, knock it behind the defender for them to run onto. Yeah, exactly. But they do seem to have worked that out in the last week. And so, I always sort of felt once that happened, even though that's pretty alien to the Guardiola model, once that happened, then it would be devastating. And of course, the problem you now have is if you're playing against City as a weaker Premier League team, and by weaker, I sort of mean anybody not Liverpool, probably, maybe Tottenham.
Brighton.
Well, no, even Brighton, I think, will be forced to sit deep against them. And you sort of you look at Haaland, you think, oh, he's massive. We can't sit deep because we don't want the ball going in the air to him. But if you push up, he's going to destroy you for pace. And that's why I think he's such an odd talent. It's the sort of talent you see very, very rarely, where he's got that blend of incredible physicality and pace. And then, to be honest, I think his heading is not as good as it probably should be.
What happens when he figures out how to do that?
Yeah, well, I mean, I remember watching a game of Christian Vieri playing against Atletico late 90s and sort of thinking, I don't know how you defend against him. I don't know what you meant to do. He's just bigger and quicker, and you know, it's like he's in the wrong weight category or something. And I think, and that for Vieri, I guess maybe because of injuries, you know, whatever, it never quite sort of worked for him consistently. But Haaland looks like, you know, it could happen. Now, occasionally when you see that type of player, what happens is they are just, you know, sort of too big for their pace or too quick for their size, and they start to get injuries. But doesn't seem to be any evidence yet that that's a problem. I know he misses a few games, but that'd be my one concern about him. But if he does stay fit, and if the sort of conditioning coaches he has and the City have, you know, managed to sort of keep everything in balance, then you know, he could set extraordinary goal scoring records.
Your one concern about him is that he may test the limits of human physical biology.
Yeah, that's it.
Jack, do you have any suggestions for how to defend against Man City now? I mean, you know, it has been, you know, I don't know if it's an orthodoxy. Actually, most teams do tend to defend really deep against Man City. But the idea that, you know, if they don't really like a team that does try to chase them a little bit, very risky to take that approach against them with Haaland there now.
I actually think teams defended too deep against City in the last few years, simply because City haven't really had that speed in behind. Certainly since, you know, since he fell out with Sané and then decided he didn't like Sterling anymore, City didn't really have that threat. So I was surprised that teams didn't actually squeeze up more. Now, as Jonathan says, that's not really an option, I think. It's going to be interesting to see how teams adapt. Or the thing is, if there's one weakness that Haaland brings to City, it's the fact that they are playing with one fewer midfielder. You know, they played their best football last season with Foden up front, basically. And so almost effectively, you know, five central midfielders and then two guys out wide. So I just wonder whether maybe against the very best teams, if you're playing Haaland as a sort of, effectively as an old-fashioned number nine, then maybe they would have one less body in the middle of the pitch. But then they've still got, they would still have De Bruyne, Rodri, Gundogan, I think they had in the middle yesterday. So they're still going to look pretty good in there.
Yeah, well, I mean, you mentioned one less midfielder. They had two extra midfielders, according to David Moyes, who I thought was quite interesting after the game, Jonathan. He just said, he said they were totally tactically done by Man City, who pushed their fullbacks into midfield, which doesn't seem that revolutionary a tactic, to be honest with you, but it certainly seemed to do the business, which just goes to show that we're busy talking about Haaland. He was obviously the match winner, but at the same time, there are all sorts of other tactical conundrums within that Man City setup that other managers are going to have to deal with as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's true, but I think that's always been true of Guardiola City, that they conjure midfielders and you know, from fullback, from centre forward, you know, they constantly increase the number of midfielders, which gives them great flexibility to create overloads in various parts of the pitch. And that's what I think they've been really good at. I think the reason that we're all talking about Haaland and the reason why he's so different and exciting is that he's a sort of explosive presence they haven't had, that he adds that sort of that element of anarchy to them. And you sort of think that polish of the midfield, they have, and, you know, City have been the top scorer in the Premier League for the last five seasons, so it's clearly not an issue at league level. But I think in big Champions League games and possibly even against Liverpool in the league, there have been times when you wonder if City are a bit too polished, whether that becomes a little bit predictable. Whereas Haaland gives them that sort of brute power that means they can hurt you in two very different ways.
Jonathan, we'll keep an eye on your beloved Potters, Potter's side, I should say, the Seagulls, over the course of the season, see if they can secure that top 10th position. That's great. Thanks, Jonathan. Thanks, Jack.
Cheers, thank you.
Cheers, thank you.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here.
I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
It's a beautiful summer's day. The breeze is stupendous.
Stupendous. Stupendous.
Would this podcast be even more stupendous without ads?
Without ads?
Ads. If so, then join us for daily commercial-free shows at secondcaptains.com for just €5 a month.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm not bumping them up. I'm not Irish. I'm just saying my observations. They are amazing. Stupendous. Stupendous.
Ken, I know you started today's podcast by expressing your, I would say, mild unhappiness with the match choice in Premier Sports this weekend, opening weekend. You wanted to see goals rain down on Gavin Bazunu.
Yeah, well, yeah, I want to see him break Harry Kane's heart.
Well,
you know?
This Saturday, it's Manchester City versus Bournemouth. Again, Erling Haaland unleashing his battery of unchecks.
On Mark Travers.
Yes, indeed. Travers versus Haaland. Oof.
Well,
there's a battle to get you through your Saturday afternoon.
That's good. Yeah, Man City against Bournemouth.
Another football podcast for members, most likely this Thursday, and plenty more football coverage besides on the other shows during the week. That's it for today. Good to have the season back up and running. Thanks, Ken.
Thank you, Owen.
Thanks, Murph.
Thank you, Ken. Thank you, Owen.
Thank you, Kieran.
Thanks for listening. Don't forget, you'll hear all episodes ad-free if you become a World Service member on secondcaptains.com. The Second Captains podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
What is that? That's the second time it's gone off. They never go home, those boys.
It is not war and death and famine. It's not that at all. It's the opposite of that. It's the persuasion of the world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.